Hello and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires that we call the internets is Joe, Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
Sadly, the same as last week. Still dizzy, but I'm a functional drunk, or dizzy. So I can drive, I can sit up and do podcasts. I can even read comics. Yeah, John Byrne Omnibus. Read through the first one. I started the second one. That was fun. And the other thing that was weird about it is I didn't realize, you know, now everybody in the Marvel Universe has probably met everybody else multiple times. But there were so many times in even reading the Byrne FF that there were times that those characters just hadn't met each other. They're like, oh, yeah, this is the first time I believe I've talked with the Vision or met the Vision. I'm like, if you remember, that was that whole pre-trial of Reed Richards. And Reed Richards had made a comment or was thinking about, I said, oh, yeah, that's right. Back then, they didn't really meet each other. Now it's like every 6 months they meet each other for whoever's got the big ass crossover. So it's kind of fun just rereading it. And like I've talked about before, a lot of times, yeah, I remember the, Thor coming down on Galactus, I say thee nay. But some of the times I miss, you miss the nitty gritty details. I blabbed on about it last week, so I don't want to. This isn't a review episode. I don't want to go on about it. I mean, I do, but I'm not going to. Now, how about you? How are you doing?
I went on a quest.
To dream the impossible dream.
Now,
I
worked at the group home that I am assigned to for the first time in 3 years.
That's one hell of a quest. Congratulations. Oh, wait a minute. I'm pre-questing. Sorry.
And afterward, because Box Day had not happened yet, I drove to Hot Comics Jordan. I bought the last previews.
Ooh.
But you know what else I bought, Joe?
Comic books and candy.
Well, the candy store's not open till Mother's Day.
Aw.
But I did buy a comic book.
Ooh, you rebel.
Spider-Man number 6, the first appearance of Spider-Boy.
Spider-Boy, aren't you buying that run?
I read it digitally.
Ah, well, that's a good one to have.
So I was going to ask, Joe, last week you said that they were selling for $25 a pop.
Yeah.
Is this a comic to be slabbed?
It depends. Because a lot of times people... Spider-Man number 6. What was the character? Spider-Boy?
Spider-Boy.
Yeah, but that's not the first appearance of Spider-Boy. Corey, do you know the first appearance of Spider-Boy?
I do not.
Amalgam.
Oh!
Yep, that's the first actual Spider-Boy. So
yeah, but that's a very different character.
Not relevant. I'm just looking on the eBays to see if anybody has any slabbed ones yet. Edge of Spider-Verse 3 is Spider-Boy's origin story.
Really?
Nobody cares. Might be a different Spider-Boy. Here, let me flip this around. There. I see runs of the entire run, of Spider-Man 1 through 7, which is the whole end of the Spider-Verse storyline going for $50. Here's somebody selling a bunch of second prints, which I guess aren't out yet, so don't worry about it. Let's see, where's some more? Nobody else? Wow. eBay has none, except in the runs.
Wow.
That's interesting. If you could conceivably get yours slabbed fast and on the eBays quick, yeah, it would be worth doing it now. Matter of fact, that's a lot of times what people do when a hot comic hits is they want to be the first one to slab it and give it out there. But I'll be willing to bet within a month, maybe. I think that's the turnaround time. I actually talked with Tim from Granite City about slabbing some books. And now that the pre-pandemic glut is kind of lessened, books are starting to come turn around, not so much like 6 months. If you could slab it and get it back timely and score that elusive 9.8, it's probably worth doing. It also depends on if Spider Boy, again, I haven't read it, issue 7. I don't even know if I have number 6 yet. Did he die or is he going to show up again?
He will show up again with Dan Slott giving his next 3 appearances.
Cool. So, yeah, as long as he doesn't cack off. You know, I keep thinking like way back, Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man number 6. I can't even say the name because I don't speak Spanish. But the one big wrestler that's going to show up in the movies, I guess. That seems to hover around $30. So, you know, again, I think a raw copy, if you could find it, I haven't seen them out there if they're still going for $25. Being that Marvel's banging out a second print. So that's kind of interesting, though, how that there's none on the eBays, at least not yet. Let me try a different search here. Spider-Man number 6, Spider-Boy. Dun, dun, dun. Nope, same results. Because if you do Spider-Man 6, you're just going to end up with tons of Spider-Men. I'll keep putzing away. I'll see if I can find anything. I just find it hard to believe there's none on there.
But that's not why we're here.
No. Wait, we have other reasons?
Yes, we're here for previews.
Yay!
So, I think this month we have something I've never seen before, Joe.
Conan on the cover? No, you must have seen him on the cover before.
Well, not just Conan on the cover, but Conan also on the spine.
Ooh.
And Conan's not in previews.
Nope. They're
it's for next month.
Conan. Preview.
So here you go. Order this book next month.
Next month, not now.
That's a poor idea.
Yeah, unless it's going to be on the cover next month, because everybody gets all excited. Oh, I want to buy it. And
well, if you hype it, and then when it comes out, it's not hyped as much. People will move on. That's why when they do movies, you get the teaser trailer about 6 months out. Then about 3 months out, you get the actual trailer. And then about a month out, you get the TV ads. So the marketing increases. You can't really increase much more than having the cover of previews with your marketing.
No, not really. Social media, maybe. But you got to be tied into who's got this? Titan Comics, Heroic?
Titan Comics.
Yeah.
Now, on the comic side cover is a new Robert Kirkman series. Robert Kirkman and Lorenzo Del Felice, Void Rivals, launch an all-new shared universe. Has there been a shared universe that's actually been a success in the last 30 years?
Oh, you want an answer? I'm not giving. I don't.
The answer's no. I think because most people are like, "Ugh, it's hard enough to keep up with Marvel and DC." Yep. Image had a kind of a shared universe when they first started, when it was, you know, all superhero stuff, but that quickly fell apart. And I think partly it was because the creators didn't get along well enough to do it anymore. And partly because people just, another universe. Jeez. Just put out good books, people. Just put out good books. So there have been changes in previews again. that I want to point out. First off, remember how Dark Horse was in the front and the middle last month? They are now just in the middle of the previews. They are no longer a, what do they call them? A premier publisher.
Did somebody buy Dark Horse?
Yes, a video game company.
Okay, so they obviously don't care.
It's more that Dark Horse is being distributed by someone else as well.
Yeah, yeah. So again, it doesn't matter. It's an extra cost. And we'll never know, but it'll be interesting to see if such product placement actually affects their sales. Because there's one thing about previews, and again, this was from way back when I had Hot Comics, but they always said that by the time you got to the Z's, sales for comics drop. So if you want to have a company and you want to have sales, try to place yourself in the front of the book. Now, this was before there was, you know, Marvel, DC had their own, and they had premier publishers and blah, blah, blah. Or you could buy, like, you know, like Aftershock. They're in the beginning of the book, and they're actually kind of their own subsection within the main stuff.
What it is, you've got the premier publishers, which now are Image, Boom, and Dynamite. Then you have what are known as the, what are the rest here called? There's Premier Comics. I have to find the table of contents.
Deluxe Publishers.
Deluxe Publishers. Yep. There you go.
Aftershock, Titan, Frank Miller Presents, Ablaze. Just flipping through. I think that's it.
Yep. And then all the rest. And then manga.
Yep.
So.
Now the previews in question, of course, as you know, this is our favorite episodes because it's interactive. You can grab your previews. We're using number 415 for April 23. And with the exception of the Conan blurb, most of these comics, unless otherwise stated, should be coming out
June.
Yep. And of course, Marvel DC supplements. We'll talk about those when we get to them. So you covered the two, the spine and the one cover. What's on the other cover? Oh, that's the Robert Kirkman one?
Yeah.
Cool. How about the fold-out flaps?
We don't ever talk about those.
Oh, more Conan.
Yeah.
All right. I got to make sure I get this flipped. All right. Of course, the other thing fun with, let's see what they got. Marked to Death, The Year of the Rat from Bliss on Tap. Just there's tons of stuff in previews. I mean, one of my favorite portions is when you get to, they usually have a spotlight section where they're talking with a creator and like, what are you reading? What do you like to read? What are you doing? Trying to find who they talk to this month. The most annoying thing, of course, is the what do they call them? Like Reader's Digest used to have 500 of them.
The blow card.
Yeah, yeah. Which is fine. Okay, let's see. Yes, so there it is on page 10. Sebastian A. Jones. And he's working on the Untamed. I can't read the, I didn't bring my readers with me. And it's nice because they talk about what are you working on. Apparently, Tales of Asunda, which is on page 410 of the book. And then what fun titles are you reading? He talks Harriet Tubman, Demon Slayer. I actually saw that for sale at the con I was at over the weekend. The Antagonist by Tyler Martin. Sonya, the Were-Spider by Greg L. Elisi. The other thing I love is that they actually have a picture of said creator. Remember years ago, talking with Maggie Thompson of the long-missed Comic Buyer's Guide, and I said, you know, what's amazing is I have no clue what half the creators I know look like. You know, and at the tail end of Hot Comics, when we were at the San Diego Comic Show, I took pictures of everybody posing with their books with the intention of using it for promotional stuff. And I still got those around somewhere, but so it's kind of nice to see what somebody looks like. The other thing, they've got a bunch of ads and stuff, but we want to go right to, oh, they got all the free comic book day stuff. But the first publisher is Image. And I'm going to start us off, unless there's something else you want to point out before we get rolling, Corey.
Nope.
All right. On page 42, congratulations to Eric Larson with Savage Dragon 267. He'll be celebrating 30 years of the ongoing series, which is impressive. And he's got a triple size anniversary issue. And you have a choice between the 100 spectacular page banner or the 70s retro trade dress. And I buy both of them because I like Eric Larson and I support whatever he does. So I just wanted to point that out. That's more of a title I always buy, but I just thought that was impressive. Speaking of the first book I'm going to recommend is on the next page, page 44. In Hell We Fight. This is an action adventure. They blurb it as the bombastic world building and adventure seeking of 8 billion genies paired with the trademark storytelling sharpness of Chew. Because John Layman is doing it. Life in hell ain't easy. Demons try to torture you for all eternity. Monsters want to eat you. There's a stunning lack of reliable indoor plumbing. And it's almost impossible to get ice cream. At least until today, when three condemned teens and their annoying tag-along demon, Frenemy, embark on a daring scheme to hijack a demon lord's delivery truck. What happens next will take them on an epic journey across the underworld, an infernal excursion of nonstop excitement and danger. And they've got what convinced me again were three pages of art where they talk about Xavier Waterfield, how he gives a report on frogs. And they said, Earth Earl Alexander, it is indeed a very fine report on the subject of natural scientists, but you were supposed to present a book report. Ironic, because Alexander hates frogs. And for the next four panels, he kicks a frog, he stomps on a frog, he beats a frog. And then one day, way back around 1870-something, on the banks of the mighty Mississippi, Ethel Bills, the frog devil, pulled Xander into the muddy waters below. Okay, you got me sold. Corey, what you got up first for Image?
Well, I'm not going to be picking it up, but I do want to point out Battle Chasers number 10. That's right. Battle Chasers number has 10. Returned.
I know. After, okay, let's see if Corey knows. Corey, when did Battle Chasers 9 come out?
Oh, it has to be 20 years ago.
1998.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
25 years ago.
Now, rumoredly, Battle Chasers 10 was released in overseas somewhere, but I've never seen it. I've seen copies of the aforementioned Sgt. Pepper and Lonely Hearts Club Band Marvel Super Special, but I've never seen the Battle Chasers. So, but here you go. Wake up all your friends and neighbors who have probably dozed off since I sold my comic shop way back in 2001. Battle Chasers is back.
This time it's only being written by Joe Madura. It's being drawn by Lud Lalabi.
On page 52.
It's a fantasy series. They do have the trade paperbacks that all tie into it being offered again.
And if you're really clever in your dollar books at shops that have been around, you could probably find all these books. I know that's how I found them.
But I don't buy anything till we get to the trade paperbacks.
Well, then I'll mention on page 48, the aforementioned Robert Kirkman story, Void Rivals. And war rages around the sacred ring where the last remnants of two worlds have collapsed around a black hole in a never-ending war. However, when pilot Derek and his rival Solila both crash on a desolate planet, these two enemies must find a way to escape together. But are they alone on this strange planet? And what dark forces await that threaten the entire universe. This is action, adventure, science fiction, and they claim it's the most anticipated new series of the year for fans of Saga and Star Wars. And if you know Robert Kirkman's stuff, you're going to enjoy it. A couple small pages, well, two small pages of art, and then on page 50, 51, you get a couple big pages. So, again, I'm with Corey on this one. I mentioned this because it looks good. I will probably pick it up as a trade.
Now, it also says that there's a surprise you won't see coming.
Surprise!
So it's a shared universe, and it starts in outer space. How much you want to bet it ties into Invincible?
I wouldn't see that coming.
For me, if you go to page 70, the first volume of Junkyard Joe, which is the new Geoff Johns Gary Frank series.
Which I bought.
This is part of his superhero line at Image. I am buying it as trade paperbacks because it's Geoff Johns. And it's really weird that his stuff for Image comes out on time for the most part. But his stuff at DC is delayed and delayed and delayed and delayed and delayed.
I blame DC.
Also, if you look on the opposite page, yes. Megaton Archives, this was a comic back in the early 80s. It was where Eric Larson, Rob Liefeld, Butch Geist, Mark Gustavich, Angel Medina, and many others, Clark Habaker, whose art I like, but he doesn't draw much anymore. This is where all of them got their start. It ran from 1981 to 1987. The Savage Dragon first appeared here. Youngblood first appeared here. It's going to reprint all the first eight issues, including the early ads, unpublished art, preliminary character designs, and commentary. This is one of those where if you're interested in the early work of the creators, you're going to want to pick it up. I can't see this being a big mainstream thing that, you know, people are going to be breaking down the doors for. But if you're a fan of those artists, you're going to want to pick it up because it's their earliest work. And it's one of those that I think is a really cool idea. And for me, that was about it for Image.
The only other, I got a couple things to point out. Page 56, Haunt You Till the End. Brian Caddy, Andrea Moody. This is horror science fiction. A ghost story for the end of the world in a not-so-far future, rife with climate disasters and worldwide instability. An eccentric billionaire and his crew, a disgraced journalist, a radical doctor, a TV dermatologist, and a squad of hard-bitten military contractors set out to prove the existence of life after death. But even if their mission is a success, the truth behind the most haunted place on Earth may not be the comforting revelation the world is hoping for. Some very small art on page 57. And we talked about Invincibles briefly. They got new editions on page 68 and 69. If you want to either pick up the trades or just pick up the compendium, which I recommend. And they also have all the different other versions that you can pick up. But yeah, the Invincibles was off. Invincibles is different. But Invincibles was a awesome read. As was Invisibles, but that's totally different. Totally, totally different. On page 76 is the Celebrate Pride Month. I like to look through this just to see how many of these different ones I've read. And let's see. Safe Sex, Volume 1. I have read. Self-Obsessed. I've read. Fox Star and Soft Boy. Bitch Planet. Paper Girls. Oh, I read that as the big, well, I guess they call it a compendium, but it was, you know, soft cover omnibus. So those are always fun to read. And that's it for me for Image.
Next
anything,
up.
Anything from Boom?
Yes.
Okay. I have
on
nothing.
On page 123, the collection of the first six issues of Damn Them All by Simon Spurrier and Charles Adlard, who you probably know from drawing Walking Dead, I remember him from when he drew the X-Files.
Cool.
After the death of Ellie's uncle Alfie, an infamous magician and occult detective, the 72 devils of the Ars Goita are mysteriously freed from their infernal realm. It's now up to her to track down each of these demons and damn them right back down to hell using holy water conjuration or just her trusty rusty claw hammer. Simon Spurrier is a writer who mostly worked, he got his start on 2000 AD and has done some stuff for Marvel, mostly in the X line and Adlard's art. I loved in both X-Files and on Walking Dead, so I've been waiting for this one to be a trade. Joe, do you have anything that booms at you?
I actually have quite a bit for Boom, which is unusual. I know I said I didn't before, but I...
You lied.
What goofed me up was, you know, usually we're talking Dark Horse by now, and I had to write, no, Dark Horse is over here. Some of these I just want to point out, like Creed on page 104. If you like Creed, the movie, this is a comic series. Point it out to your friends, or better yet, pick it up for them. And you know it'll be a trade coming out too. So that's one you want to pick up. There's a new Magic series starting on page 118. Magic, Planeswalker, Noble number 1. And on page 121 is a Something is Killing the Children Pen and Ink number 1. It's a deluxe art focused format that just features the stunning black and white interior art with artist commentary. So it says, begin your collection with this premium reformatting of Something is Killing the Children. I don't see word balloons on it, so it might just be the art. And again, if you really, really like it, it's something that you should probably pick up. I want to give a second shout out to Damn Them All that Corey just talked about, page 123. Page 125 has a graphic novel called The Approach. When airport employees Mac and Abigail find themselves snowed in after a blizzard, they witness a terrible plane crash, one that's been missing for 27 years. But it's not the sky that deserves dread, but what lies beyond it. And this collects The Approach 1 through 5, Jeremy Hahn, Jason A. Hurley. And it caught my attention, actually sounds really interesting, as does on page 126. Specs, small town Ohio, 1986. All Kenny and Ted want is to not feel like outcasts. What happens when a pair of X-ray glasses mysteriously appears? The magic specs open a world of possibilities for these misfit teens through the granting of literal wishes. Things start out innocent, but when they wish that their bully would disappear, things take a cursed turn with far darker consequences than they thought possible. So. Actually, there's 3 graphic novels right in a row from Boom. Again, I'll have to total them up and see what I can pick up. Other than that, that's it for me.
And next up, the last of our premier publishers is Dynamite.
Do you have anything?
I do not.
All right, I will go through things. A lot of these are things I point out, like if you are a fan of Vampirilla, page 132 has Victory Number 1. And apparently, this is Vampirella's 50th anniversary. And she showed up somewhere along the line, because this apparently is Vampirella's lover.
And no, this is from her 50th anniversary. I was thinking, Vampirella came out in 1969.
Yeah. I see how it reads. So, but anyways, if you're into that, you want to check it out. A lot of different variant covers. Page 136 has an interview with the creator's team. If you like Betty Page, there's a new number 1 starting. Lots of different variant covers, including some limited version variant covers by Joseph Michael Linsner. There's a Dynamite Metal premium cover, which are really cool if you can ever pick one up. Photo Black Bag, which usually means one of her racier photos. If you're not quite sure if you want it, check on page 141. Let's see if I say her name right. Mirka and Doffel, she's talking about writing the series, so check it out. Corey, do you play the video game Starfinder?
I do not.
I don't either, but if you do, check out page 142, Starfinder, Angels of the Drift. And on page 144, original Starfinder director and series writer, is interviewed. He's also writing it. So, let's see, on page 150, I want to point out that Gargoyles number 7 brings back, I only know her because it was one of the hottest action figures when they first came out, Damona. She's back. And if you've waited to jump on board with Gargoyles, they're saying this is a perfect spot to jump in. Tons of variant covers to choose from, including the limited Virgin covers. Some of them are shown on the next couple pages. And finally, my favorite part on page 186, 187, these are the extra fun things that I think Dynamite does that if I had a comic store, I'd be picking up. So this month, they're doing a lot of hardcovers. There's a Karma, Michael, DePasco, what's the name of it? But it's a topless limited hardcover. They made 1,000. They only got 500 to sell. Underneath it, it's Army of Darkness versus Reanimator. Necronomicon? Rising. If you know either of these, probably you know it's good. Across from it is a Miss Fury Joy Division trade paperback. Same thing, 550 copies made, 250 left. There's a Lady Hell trade paperback. So some of those are kind of interesting. I don't know if they'll be worth anything, but you know, you kind of, it's kind of interesting the way they market it. There's only 500 left. Ooh, only 250 left. So here's your, this is your last chance. And that's it for Dynamite. Now, into the deluxe publishers. Anything from Aftershock?
Well, shouldn't we go to DC and Marvel?
If you want to, they're sort of premier, yeah. I suppose. All right, let me switch, which is basically grab the DC Connect, which is issue number 35 for April 2023.
Which means that DC switched up their distribution 35 months ago.
Yay. Not for me. All right, let's start. Yeah, retailers are like, whatever, guys. Page 2, a book that caught my attention. Mostly because I saw it was written by Tom King. The Penguin. After retiring to Metropolis following his death, Oswald Cobblepot finds himself forced back into the unpredictable and violent Gotham City underworld as a pawn for the United States intelligence community. Gotham's criminal elements has been evolving since he was last in the city, with his bastard twin children ruling the Iceberg Lounge. And what of the man he framed for his death? Batman? Is Penguin walking into a death sentence? Well, probably not. But across from it is also Penguin number 0, which apparently, let's see, what's it?
This is a reprint.
Okay.
This is a reprint of the backup stories from Batman.
Which is good for me because I haven't read any Batman. I didn't even know Penguin was sick. So, again, if you have Batman, you don't need it, but it does collect Batman 125 through 126. Catwoman basically carrying out the departed's last wishes. Some of the variant covers are shown. That Brian Bolan one looks pretty bizarre. So that's the first thing for DC for me. How about you, Corey? What you got?
The first half of the book is made up of the Dawn of DC promotion, which is kind of, okay, we had another crisis. No new number ones, however, both Flash 800 and Wonder Woman 800 are kind of going to act as, here's your new creative team, kind of their reset. So with Flash number 800, it's a 42-page book, which is weird because remember they did the 80th anniversary books a couple of years ago, and they were 100-pagers.
I wonder if they decided on that, not to do it, because what I found happened is a lot of shops ordered tons of these and they liquidated the crap out of them.
It very well could be. I didn't order the regular comic because they then put out a hardcover with extra stories of those. So I doubt they're going to do it with this. But remember, they did it with Detective Comics 1000, Action Comics 1000, on and on. The Flash book is written by Jeremy Adams, who's the current writer, Jeff Johns, Mark Waid, Josh Williams. And I believe Josh Williams is the person taking over. No, Simon Spurrier and Mike Diodato are taking over. So this wraps up all of the Jeremy Adams, as well as having short stories from Mark Waid and Jeff Johns. The Wonder Woman. Let's see here. They do have the new creative team, which is Tom King and Daniel Sampieri. I am not a big Wonder Woman fan. It's a character that I only pick up when there's a creative team I like. Well, Tom King's on it, so I got to read it.
So the question I have, if they're all the same, which variant cover would you go for? The variant covers for you playing at home on the Flasher on page 23 and Wonder Woman's on page 25. And, of course, the little tiny words, not final trade dress covers.
Well, the let's see, who did the Michael Cho cover is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And foil variant covers. I finally saw some of the foil variants that have been coming out lately when I went to Hot Comics, and they are really, really sparkly.
Yeah.
But when I see them, it just, it makes me want to like listen to Nirvana and drink some Orbitz because they're super, super 90s.
Yeah.
But I would probably go with the Michael Cho because to me, that's the most, visually interesting. And then with Wonder Woman.
I'm torn between Boland or Campbell.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd like to get the swimsuit variant cover, but by Mike Allred, but I have to see if that's going to be like an extra cost or is that just one of those?
Yeah, if it's a special cost, I wouldn't get it.
The Wonder Woman one looks interesting with the special foil, like you said, but
yeah,
you know. That's $7.99, and the book itself is $5.99. So if you like foil for $2, foil sell. I have nothing else comic-wise that I'm interested in. Anything else for you?
Let's see. On the next page, DC Pride 2023. They put these out every Pride month now. But I want you, Joe, take a look at who it's written by.
Grant Morrison.
There you go. That's all I need. His first DC story in a couple of years. Grant Morrison, who now has said that he is non-binary, which means he's neither male nor female in his mind, which does not surprise me at all.
Sorry.
But Grant Morrison doing a DC story, yeah, I'm all in.
And which variant cover do you like? Assuming they're all the same, you know, cost-wise.
Boy, I like the regular cover.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I like the regular cover. The variant covers don't do a lot for me.
I kind of like the Bartel special foil variant, but I don't. Again, it's foil. I'd have to stop and think about it.
But then there's also on the next page a one-shot DC Pride Through the Years, which reprints Flash 53, in which we find out the Pied Piper is gay. Detective Comics 854, the first appearance of Batwoman, the current Batwoman, Supergirl 19, and an all-new story starring Alan Scott.
I do like that
cover. And I love that cover. Love
that cover. That is a fantastic cover.
Very.
Derek Charm, give you a shout-out for that cover.
And then when it comes to trade paperbacks, there's only one that I am excited about. I'm looking. I don't think they have. Yeah, there is no. Wait, nope. There is an omnibus, but it's not in the previews. So I will mention it when mention it in a minute. But the Lazarus Planet.
Yes, that's me too.
This collects all of the Lazarus Planet one-shots, which are basically, here's what DC is doing to kind of reboot all of these characters. And it's almost like a big secret origins for the new DC universe. So if you want to know all about the new characters, it collects, Lazarus Planet Alpha, Assault on Krypton, Once We Were Gods, Legends Reborn, Next Evolution, Dark Fate, and then, of course, because everything has to have an Alpha and an Omega, it has an Alpha and Omega. Now, they are reprinting an omnibus, but it's not in here. You do have to actually ask your retailer because they didn't fit it in. They are reprinting the Spy versus Spy omnibus, which I did not even know existed. But I guess they came out with one a few years ago, and now they are reprinting it. It is every Spy versus Spy, not just by Phobius, but also the ones by Peter Cooper and other people. Anything else from DC, John?
Nope, that's it.
Then here's where my money goes.
Spy versus Spy. I might have to see about buying that.
Marvel. Now, Joe, normally I buy stuff digitally and wait for the trade. I don't think I can do that with this.
Uh-oh. Which one? So we're talking Marvel supplement number 19?
Yeah. Excuse me. Ultimate Invasion, 1 of 4,
mm-hmm.
Written by Jonathan Hickman, drawn by Brian Hitch. The Illuminati must form once again to stop the Maker from his plans to destroy or perhaps rebuild this universe with Miles Morales at the center of it all. Brian's work on the Ultimates helped redefine superhero comics for the 2000. Wait until you see what he and Jonathan have in store for this decade.
And yeah. What's funny is I just finished reading, as I said, the John Byrne Alpha Flight crossover with a different master. So.
Well, the master. No, it's the Maker. He's not the master. He's the Maker. And what it is, it's the evil Reed Richards from Ultimate Universe.
He's got that dumb helmet on.
And I love how they made him evil, which is basically after they did the first story arc. Somebody at Marvel said, yeah, when you read about Reed Richards' origin, it comes off as a villain. And they decided that they would very slowly turn him into the ultimate villain in the Ultimate Universe. And Hickman was very, very in love with that idea. So now he's going to play with it. And because it's Jonathan Hickman, you know that I'll love it.
Oh, yeah.
There is a new Hulk number one.
Yep, I'm on that.
It's by Philip Kennedy Johnson and Nick Klein. Philip Kennedy Johnson, I don't think he's written a mainstream superhero book before. He's best known for the Alien series at Marvel. Then the next number one is Black Panther number one by Eve Ewing and Chris Allen. They show some interior art and some special covers. So Marvel's dropping three new number ones that make me very excited. Joe, what do you got?
On the next page, Loki 1 of 4, because I like miniseries. And this is Loki Saves the Marvel Universe. So he may have been the benevolent god of stories now, but Loki's past as the god of lies returned to haunt him. An ancient, powerful weapon he once built ends up scattered across the ten realms. He must track down these weapons before they fall into the wrong hands and bring about Ragnarok. So they say, guest stars galore, exciting new characters, startling twists await this all-new miniseries by Dan Waters and Jermaine Peralta. I couldn't pronounce it. And if you didn't like Kelly Thompson's run of Captain Marvel, you definitely don't want to buy page 14. Because that's the final issue of his historic run. All I know is I'm looking forward to the omnibus. Because I picked this up in the beginning and then I let it lapse. And then I'm like, oh, this is actually pretty good.
Well, and you know how Spider-Man is going to have that the most shocking story in 50 years. Mm-hmm. We get on page 24 facsimile editions of Amazing Spider-Man 121 and 122, which are the death of Gwen Stacy.
Yep. Yep. On page. Wait, are we in the graphic novels yet?
No, that's just page 24.
Oh, yeah. No, I had down page 40. Sons of Origin of Marvel Comics. It's a Marvel Tales, which will have, let's see, the Incredible Hulk, Journey into Mystery, which is Thor, Tales of Suspense for Iron Man, Strange Tales for Doctor Strange, and Daredevil 1. I mention this because this is something really cool you could buy for, I don't know, a kid that's kind of wanting to maybe pick up comics. I know I sold, I think I told the story when I was at the source and a mother was looking for something and you're kind of like, what could I possibly recommend that isn't one of many? And I explained to her, it's soap opera entertainment. I said, you're better off with the trades. But again, that's like a whole story. You know, I would say, you know, if you don't want to spend the money, not knowing if you'll like it or not, take them to the library, pick them up there. But, and then I did find a Sons of Origin that I believe, or the first one was just, what did they call it?
Because Origins of Marvel Comics.
Yeah. I'm looking, which is weird. I have those on my back book here.
It's weird that they started with Son of Origins rather than Origins of Marvel Comics for these.
Well, no, there was a previous one.
There was?
Because the one I recommended that woman buy had Spider-Man, Fantastic Four.
Was it a Marvel Tales?
Yeah. Yeah, because it was about the same price. Yeah, I believe so. Because I told her this is the original Tales, and if they really like some, there are ways to get them without spending multiple hundreds of dollars. And then, of course, what I missed right next to it was a Miles Morales number one, which I should have started with. So I'll look for the title next time I'm at the source.
I did miss tomorrow. It.
Yeah. Because that had all the beginning ones. And
That was last year.
I know. And the fact that it was still on the sources shelf is actually very astute. Because you definitely, you know, things like that have a perennial life. Keep them out. Let people see them.
Well, it's still available at cover price on eBay, so I'm good.
Yep, yep, not a big deal.
Well, next time it's $7 to ship it.
Yeah, I was going to say, next time you're at I'll look for it when I go to the source tomorrow. Maybe I can pick it up for you. Okay. That way you can avoid shipping.
I love the Marvel Tales. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Joe, I have a new tale of one of these stories.
Ooh.
This is from reading a recent article in Alter Ego. Somebody asked, well, why was the Doctor Strange, you know, two stories and then two issues without, and then they started up again? And what it was, Steve Ditko drew the first two Doctor Strange stories and brought them in to Stan, asking me if he wanted to publish them. And if he didn't, he was going to sell them to Carlton. But Stan shoved them in the back of Tales. It worked out, which is why Doctor Strange looks very different in his story in 115. Because remember, in the early stories, the Ancient One is called the Master. Doctor Strange looks Asian. And when they picked it up for a series, Stan said, okay, we're going to change the Master to the Ancient One, kind of redo Doctor Strange's face, and we're going to go from there. But it was an unsolicited thing where Steve Ditko was basically, he brought it in, said, I've got this idea for a series. You don't want it? I'll take it to Carlton. Stan said, yeah, I'll take it. So when people talk about, oh, Stan ordered people to create, et cetera, you need to remember that's not how comics worked back in the day. People would bring in, hey, do you want to publish this? Looking for a job.
Yeah, man, you're making money off this stuff?
Well, it was more Steve Ditko was like, well, you know, hey, here's an idea. I'd rather have Marvel publish it for this much because Carlton's page rate was, what, $10 a page less. So he wanted Marvel to publish it so he could get more per page. So there you go. Let's see, on page 42, we have Marvel's annual Pride book. Covered by Amy Reeder, but a lot of the creators listed are people I don't know that well. But I like anthology books. Because so call, that's how call, you get in, to know
we'll
inter-
call in, we'll interview you. We'll get everybody to know you.
But we don't have operators are stranding by.
And they are because we don't have any phones.
And we don't pay them to sit.
No.
Joe, what else do you have?
I have nothing comic-wise. So why don't you go ahead and start into the...
Start into Where My Money Marvel Goes?
Collected editions, yes.
Now, here's the thing. There are a bunch of omnibuses here that I either already have or don't want or care about. So I'm going to be skipping around a little bit. Yeah. I will, however, be picking up Black Panther by Christopher Priest Omnibus 2, which finishes off his run on Black Panther, which was started as part of Marvel Knights. And to this day is still the longest running Black Panther series. It went 62 issues, was written by Christopher Priest, drawn mostly by Jim Calafiore, Sal Velluto, but there's also art by George Lucas, Dan Fraga, Patrick Zercher, and others. Then on the next page is New Warriors Classic, Omnibus Volume 3. And if you look, there is the Scarlet Spider on the cover. And the reason for that was when Marvel did the Marvolution, which everybody at Marvel called Marvel Execution because it ended up with a lot of people getting let go. What it was, Marvel kind of split itself into five little tiny publishing companies, each with an editor. And what nobody knew at the time was whichever editor's book sold the best would be promoted to editor-in-chief. That is why we got Bob Harris as Marvel editor-in-chief, because the X-Men sold the best. But the New Warriors was put with the Spider-Man books. So Scarlet Spider was put front and center on the New Warriors as the New Warrior sales were dropping. This reprints, let's see here, New Warriors 64 to 75, the Justice miniseries, the last two issues of Nova, the issues of Spider-Man that tied in with Scarlet Spider joining the New Warriors, a Venom series that crossed over into it, and some stuff from Marvel Comics Presents. This wraps up the New Warriors. And, you know, when you look at the creator list, it's like, oh, I can see why. Because it's, okay, Evan Skolnick, Dwight Coe, Fabian Nyasasia, Todd DeFalco, Todd DeZago, Ed Lazelleria. It was just... During this time at Marvel, it was just chaos. You know, a lot of books were written by whoever was in the office. And New Warriors became very much a part of that, where after Fabian Nyasasia left, there wasn't a lot of focus. It just kind of, well, maybe it'll sell if we do this. But one thing they didn't do is have a regular creative team on it. So I'm picking it up because I enjoyed that series and I like wrapping it up. We also have a pair of 2099 omnibuses. There is the Spider-Man 2099 Omnibus Volume 2, which finishes up the original series, as well as the 2014 and 2015 series, the Captain Marvel storyline that was a part of it, the Superior Spider-Man that was a part of it, the Secret Wars 2099. Remember in Secret Wars, there were all the battle zones, and one of them was a 2099 battle zone. So if you bought the first volume, you pretty much got all of the original series. This is all the stuff they did after. But on the next page is the X-Men 2099 Omnibus, which was mostly written by John Francis Moore and drawn by Ron Lim. Of course, a whole bunch of other people worked on it. This is the entire run, 1 through 35, as well as the tie-ins. And the X-Nation 2099, which was supposed to be a spinoff series, but ended up lasting only 4 issues because the 2099 universe collapsed. In the Marvel Remasterworks, we've got X-Men Volume 2. Then for the regular Masterworks, we've got Tomb of Dracula number 3. So only 2 of those. And then the final omnibus listed, and I'm hovering on it, I need to read some reviews on this series, is Star Wars The High Republic Season 1 Omnibus. I don't know a lot about the High Republic, other than this is long before the prequels. So this is set sometime after the Dawn of the Jedi, but before the movies, which in a lot of ways, the books and the Dark Horse Comics and everything explored that. But when they hit the reset button, they had to kind of redo everything. And that's what this is. And Joe, if there are any that you're picking up that I did not know to,
I have no Marvel graphic novels this month.
Wow.
I know. It's just me. With the exception of the Lazarus Planet for DC, it was the same way.
On page 95, Avengers War Across Time is the Paul Levitz miniseries. This is set in the very early days of the Avengers. It's Paul Levitz, who's never written for Marvel before because he was the editor-in-chief or co-president or publisher or whatever over at DC forever and ever. And it's drawn by Alan Davis, so I'm going to get it because it's drawn by Alan Davis.
Yeah, I'm picking that up as a regular series. It's okay.
The Demon Wars Treasury Edition.
Oh, I'm very tempted on that.
Page 105 reprints the Demon Wars comics in the Treasury size. And I need to go back and look. And if I've already ordered this as a trade paperback, I can't double dip. But if I have not, I would rather have this at the Treasury size because the art is so beautiful.
I'll make you this deal. If you did double dip, I will buy the trade from you. Because the only reason I don't want this, I have nowhere to store a treasury size thing. I mean, I have treasury size things now, and I'm like, ugh. So double check and let me know.
The Trials of X, Volume 12, is on page 106. And then when we get to the Epic Collections, the Epic Collection for Spider-Man, number 9, this is Spider-Man 143 through 164, which is odd because issue 164 was the first one. No, 163 was the first one that I picked up off the newsstands. But this is everything. This is the original Clone Saga. Mighty Thor gets a new printing of number 17, which is Thor 401 to 418. There is a new Daredevil, which is the Daredevil, 312 to 318. And you're thinking, wow, that's not a lot of issues for an epic. It also has the annual number 9, the Daredevil Black Widow graphic novel, and then one of the greatest miniseries ever, Daredevil Man Without Fear, which was written by Frank Miller and drawn by John Romita Jr. I wish that they were putting that out in its own book, but it's going to be part of this epic collection. We then get a Thunderbolts epic collection. So if you wanted to read the Thunderbolts, but man, that price of that omnibus was too high, here you go. There's a Thunderbolts epic collection, which has their first appearances in Thor, the first 12 issues of Thunderbolts, the Incredible Hulk issue they're in, the Spider-Man team-up they're in, the Heroes for Hire they're in. On the next page is another Thor. This is a new one. This is Hell on Earth, which is number 22. This was the Roy Thomas run from 476 to 490. And then a reprint of the Fate of the Phoenix X-Men Epic Collection, which is number 7, which is Uncanny X-Men 129 to 143. So that's up until Byrne's last issue. So many classic stories in this. You've got the Fate of the Phoenix. You've got the Days of Future Past. You have Kitty Pryde versus an alien. Oh, I'm sorry. It's a brood. And then that is all.
But wait, there's more. Corey, I want you to pick up your previews catalog. And
oh, wait. Page. I forgot one, Joe. I forgot What's that? One. And this is one that if you don't have it, you need to buy it. This is on page 116, Thor the Mighty Avenger, written by Roger Landridge, drawn by Chris Samnee. This was a second Thor series that slipped under the radar, did not last, and is the best Thor story in the last 20 years.
So if we miss it, you'll be Thor-y.
This is Edgar and Harvey Award-nominated Roger Landridge and artist Chris Samnee reimagine the God of Thunder. Thrill as Thor faces the mischievous machinations of his adopted brother Loki, battles robots, etc., etc. This were Roger Landridge wrote so many great comics that were aimed at kids. Chris Samnee went on to become Chris Samnee, who is a superstar artist. This was kind of his first work at Marvel. This is an amazing book. I have yet to hear anybody who's read it and not said that they loved it. Now we could go back to the regular previews.
Yeah, but there's more for Marvel.
Oh, really?
So grab your previews and go to page 461, way in the back, because there's a new Spider-Man in town, and he's got a lot to learn about being a hero.
Oh, this is through the Viz series.
There are two Japanese manga-ish offerings for Marvel characters. The first one is Spider-Man Fake Red. And again, this is Spider-Man in the manga style. Everything changes for you when he finds one of Spider-Man's costumes abandoned in an alleyway. At first, it's fun to put on the costume and play hero, but when a powerful enemy's start to appear, you quickly realize he's out of his element. Still, with Spider-Man nowhere to be found, the city needs someone to save it. And underneath it, all I have to say is snicked. Wolverine stands as the lone hope of the few remaining humans in a desolate wasteland. So this is from, I'm not even going to try to pronounce this person, but he's Tusami Nahi, bringing his signature style to bear on the iconic X-Men. Took Wolverine to a darker, more terrifying dimension, presented here in a deluxe edition. These two look amazing. So again, check it out. Way back on page 461 in the manga section. We don't normally go through manga much, but I definitely need to point that out to all my Marvelites. What did we call? True believers. That's what Stan used to call us.
The Mighty Marvel Marching Society of Foom and Wham! Wild Agents of Marvel.
Anyways, now we do the rest of previews. That was Paul Harvey's Eric Don't Sue. All right. I will start us off. So we're back in the previews.
I do want to point out, Aftershock, which we talked about as having financial trouble, they have no regular comics. They have two new trade paperbacks, and then the rest of their pages are spotlighting their back stock.
Yeah, yeah. So check it out, because they do an interesting thing. I was like, page 194, spotlight Garth Ennis, page 196, Steve Orlando, page 198, Cullen Bunn, that goes Margaret Burnett. So that's the way to go. We're going to roll in. I'm going to roll into Titan. So on page 219, dun, dun, dun. Star Trek, the Illustrated Oral History, the original cast. It's a hardcover. The original cast and crew of Gene Roddenberry's Star Trek discussed the making of the iconic shows and film in this fully illustrated collector's edition. The illustrated book compiles years of, they said, unmissable. That'd be immissible. Content with exclusive new features, interviews from the everybody: William Shatner, Leonard Nimoy, DeForest Kelly, Nicole, or Nichelle Nicole, George Takei, Walter Koenig, James Doohan. So if you're a Star Trek fan, this one looks really good. It's not on sale till September. You can order it now.
Joe, go back to page 210.
210.
From Hard Case Crime, an original graphic novel, Noir Burlesque by Enrico Marini. An atmospheric violent crime caper set in 1950s New York, with everything from femme fatales to double crosses. A heist gone wrong forces Slick to do a job for his employer, Rex, to repay the debt he owns. But Stick is in love with Caprice, Rex's ex-call girl wife turned burlesque legend. And Rex also has the only way for Slick to avenge his murdered father. There are two pages there. It looks like it's done in black, white, and red. I love me some Hard Case Crime. I just do. Anything Hard Case Crime does, I'm there for it.
Cool.
Joe?
Do you know Sven Gulli?
Yes, I do.
Yep. Me TV sensation Sven Gulli has a book coming out of Frank Miller Presents. It's on page, where am I? 237. So he appears in his first full-length comic book feature as an evil Svenbot goes to the past to undo Sven Gulli's future. Learn the secrets behind Sven and his crazy cast of friends. You can buy this at your local store, and remember, no personal checks. It's a general audience horror comedy, and it looks to be pretty good. Let's see. Rich Colts, Jim Rochette, Chris Fuller.
Rick Cause is Sven Gulli.
Yep. Chris Jones, Jill Thompson, Art Bazitar, and Franco do the art. And a couple of variant covers, both of theirs. So you can choose what you want.
All good Chicago artists, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Because Sven Gulli is out of Chicago. This is his, they've been doing this big anniversary thing. It's a, what it is, if you don't know Sven Gulli, and a lot of people don't, he has been a horror host, and he's probably the last horror host standing, in Chicago for years and years and years. There was a gap from the 80s to, I don't know when, like, I'm not completely well-versed. But the horror host thing was really big in the 60s, kind of faded in the 70s. By the 80s, it was over. And what it was, these local channels would buy these packages of horror movies. Like, it used, there was the Universal Pack, which had all the original Dracula, Frankenstein, et cetera, et cetera. And then by the time we got to the 70s, they were priced so far out of range that local places were then buying the Roger Corman, you know, Attack of the Giant Leeches type thing. But they would have a local host to introduce them and make jokes and show letters from kids. And Sven Gulli was one of the guys who did that. Then when MeTV started up, they started running his show out of Chicago on MeTV, where he would do the same sort of shtick on Saturday nights. And by the time we got to 2019, it was pulling in 1 million viewers on Saturday nights. Now, Joe, you know about MeTV and all those other, what they call digital channels, which are basically, they just show reruns. And they're, you know, here in the Twin Cities, what is it? Like 11.2 or something. What it is, it's a channel you could pick up. Now that we have digital, they can squeeze more channels in. So Channel 11 has, you know, 5 different channels, and Channel 9 has 7, on and on. And they would pick up these syndicated channels. And MeTV, normally they're showing Andy Griffith reruns and MASH reruns. And, you know, they're really happy if they get an audience of 100,000 people for one of their shows. The fact that Sven Gulli is pulling 1 million viewers is amazing. It is beating Fox on Saturday nights. It's beating CBS on Saturday nights. It's getting better ratings than two of the four networks on a Saturday night. So if you don't know Svengoolie, it's available if you watch MeTV on Saturday nights. And this is a really cool tie-in to it. Let's see. Do I have anything in the Frank Miller line? No, I'm waiting for the collection for Ronin. Also, yeah, they are kind of reformatting some of their books. So let's see. Ronin issue 3, the Frank Miller variant will no longer be a ratio variant. Also inside the issue will begin featuring Frank's original layouts for that issue. So they're kind of upping their game a little bit. They talk about how it's growing pains, but I think it's more, okay, we need to do something to stand out a little more in this market.
Yep.
Joe, what you got next?
I'm mentioning this. I have it in a collection, but at Abstract Studios, Terry Moore is reformatting Strangers in Paradise, and his first volume is out. Because what he's doing is a brand new update, 4 volumes. And trying to see, blah, 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 blah. It's, Strangers in Paradise, I enjoyed it. My daughters enjoyed it. It's a funny, complicated, multi-genre graphic novel. It's one of those, if you've never read it before, this might be a good chance to jump on board. I think that's all I'm going to say. You go to page 245, you can read the synopsis on it. How about you, Corey? What you got next?
Also on page 245 is a book that I picked up as a hardcover. I cannot recommend it enough. It is from Abrams Press. It's called Dirty Pictures, How Rebels Invented Comics. In the 1950s, comics meant pow, bam, superheroes, family-friendly gags, and Sunday funnies. But in the 60s, inspired by those strips and the satire of Mad, a new generation of creators set out to subvert the medium, and with it, American culture. Their comics, spelled with an X, it's about underground comics. It is a really good history of the phenomena. I really recommend it if you are interested in the history of comics. It's just a great read. Just an absolute great read. Joe?
All right. Let's see. 248. Razor's Edge One-Shot. I point this out because there seems to be a lot of things that were real popular back when I owned a comic store making their return. And we've talked about Megaton already. Strangers in Paradise is kind of reaching to that. Here's Razor. Razor was a character. I don't even know who created it. But Corey, tell the folks who was the major character that debuted in Razor Annual number 1.
Oh, gosh. Wasn't it she?
You are correct. Give that boy a thinking grenade.
I get a shiny new dime.
And here's your chance because, let's see, Emerald Entertainment is bringing back Razor in her crazy, just looking at the different variant covers they've got. The regular cover is $450. The other ones are PI, so that means they may be more expensive. Razor, essentially, hang on a second while I
whip this out.
I'm just going to Google it because I just want to make sure. I mean, I have Razor comics, but it's been so long since I read it. Oops, got to spell it right, though. Razor. Let's see. Razor is Nicole Simon Mitchell, daughter of the infamous Frank Mitchell, who was a gangster who owned City Cops, but he stepped over the line, wound up dead, killed in a so-called robbery arranged by an arch rival. Mitchell's youngest daughter, Jackie, was kidnapped, never heard from again. Nicole, the eldest, was found lying beside her dead father. She spent the next years in intensive psychiatric care. The cure didn't take. So as Razor, and if you see her, she's Got two giant razors on her fist. She wields a pair of claw-like razors out to avenge her father's killer and anyone else who gets in the way. And they say it's brutal, shockingly violent, originally published by London Knight. And here's your chance to get back on board, because they're going to be following different London Knight characters. If I had my druthers, I would either go for the Bud Root variant or the photo variant, because I kind of like that. So, yeah, if you enjoyed her back whenever it came out, let's see, Razor, Morbid Angels, Lethal Strike, a bunch of others. Oh, interior pages do contain some nudity and probably a lot of gore and guts. So check it out.
Let's head into Dark Horse, shall we?
Already?
They're on page 298.
I don't even have Dark Horse listed as separate. You know, I just have pages. So let's see, 298. Dun, dun, dun. Okay. They're just there. Dark Horse, whatever.
The Baltimore Omnibus, which is another of the Mike Mignola omnibuses. Got to pick that up. But on page 299, we have a hardcover collection of Den, which is the fantasy series by Richard Corbin. This special edition also has bonus material. Our pages restored by his collaborator, Jose Villarubia. New lettering, an introduction by Patton Oswalt, all presented in a gorgeous hardcover with a dust jacket. This is also the character who, if you saw the original heavy metal movie, was voiced by John Candy, of all people, because it was the nerdy kid who gets teleported to a fantasy world where he's a big, strong He-Man.
Mm.
We also have softcover reprints of EC Comics' Weird Fantasy and Eerie Archives number 2, both well worth your money. And then I think that is it for what I had for Dark Horse. Yes, that is.
Yeah, the only thing I've got is on page 301, The Oddly Pedestrian Life of Christopher Chaos, number 1, from the New York best-selling and multi-Eisner Award-winning writers of Something is Killing the Children, Department of Truth, and House of Slaughter. See, and the artist, who apparently is on Victor and Nora, A Gotham Love Story, comes this LGBTQ+ horror hero coming-of-age series. It's a cross between Invincible meets Doom Patrol. Dark Horse, you're going to have to work on these descriptions. What caught my attention are the different covers in that. You know, if you're not going to have an entire half page describing everything in beautiful detail, you're going to have to do a lot better in your just tiny little blurbs here. But regardless, that's one that I'll probably be picking up. I'm going to jump back to page 255 if we're done with Dark Horse.
Sure.
And point out The Right Project. Not because this is one of those where I saw the name involved. Writer, Tom DeFalco. Artist, Ron Frenz. Sal Buscema, Ron Lim, Robert Jones. This comic has 3 complete stories, 4 different variant covers. At last, a superhero for anyone who sincerely loves superheroes. Teenage video gamer who joins a digital daredevil for truth, justice, and a universe of hoo-ha, action, and angst. Let's see, what else we got here? While working on The Right Project, the name of the book, let's see, that allows computer constructs to assemble physical mass, Dr. Dex Click stumbles upon the new champ of split-second adventure, but Mr. Right is little more than a soulless animatronic until he bonds with Jeffrey Player One Lopez. Since Jeffrey is a true believer, he helps transform a heartless avatar into a compassionate and relentless hero. A true hero who lives within us all. So the names alone, I'll give it a shot. And again, you look at the variant covers, they're all expensive. Limited foil for $20, metal for $74.99, black and white for $5.99, or just grab the main book for $3.99. Corey?
If you go to page 314, this one almost slipped by me. Until Howard Chaykin himself put up a notice on Facebook. Sunshine Patriots by Howard Chaykin.
Ooh.
Follow the adventures of two former members of Roosevelt's Rough Riders Cavalry when they arrive in Hollywood in 1913 and find themselves caught in a web of a dangerous new world. At first, Sicilian mobsters make their way to the City of Angels. The two heroes find themselves recruited as mercenaries for the movie studios and drawn into the cutthroat world of cinema with a front row seat to the building of a new American empire. I am fascinated by the silent era of movie making, not just silent movies, but the whole era. Everything from Thomas Edison sending goons around New York City. And if you were making movies, Edison was claiming the copyright on movie making. So his people would destroy your equipment and your studio, which is why all the other movie studios went out to California. Out there, it was just lawless craziness until you get to at least the mid-20s. And the fact that Howard Chaykin's going to do a book set in that world makes me giddy. I cannot wait for this.
All right. Back on page 260, I mentioned it a while back. They made it. Gold Diggers, issue number 300, all done by one creator. This is under Antarctic Press. Tons of variant covers you can choose from at various prices. But again, just a shout out to Fred Perry. That is absolutely fantastic that you made it. 30 years, 300 issue, over 75,000 pages. So here's your chance to jump on. Page 260, 261 have a really nice write-up on that. So I just wanted to point that out. As far as something I may buy, because I've read Gold Diggers and it's not for me. Way up, page 319, Nuking Alaska. This is from Graphic Munde. Oh, by the way, I'm just going to point out there's a new Overstreet volume. So
that was actually my next.
Yeah, so if you okay, I'll let Corey do that. But right across from it, Nuking Alaska by Peter Dunlap Scholl. Nuking Alaska is an unnervingly funny tale of life in Alaska during the tensest times in the Cold War. Recounts the surprising and tragicomic details of the nuclear threats faced by Alaskans, including Project Chariot in the late 1950s, early 60s, the near nuclear disaster caused by the Great Alaskan Earthquake of 1964, and the 1971 test of a warhead on the island of Amchitka. And it's done by Alaskan resident Peter Dunlap Scholl. He shares the terrible consequences that these events and others had for humans and animals alike, all in the service of Atoms for Peace. And this is right in my wheel well because that's the stuff I studied in college. So I'm definitely going to be checking that out. But Corey, you said there was something else on the page you were looking at.
Yes, it is the 53rd annual Overstreet Price Guide.
Let's see, what's the last one I bought? I had the 50th edition from 2021.
That's the last one I bought. Yep. And I used to buy this every year as well, but I've kind of, because so much information is available on the internet and because the articles in Overstreet are not aimed at me anymore. Now, if you are a newer collector or, you know, if you haven't been reading comics and comic publications and stuff like that since 1976, the stuff in here is probably new to you. But for me, it's something I only need to buy every few years to get updates on prices on older stuff, research on older series. But a lot of this is available now on comics.org or the different public domain sites I go to. But Overstreet is the 800-pound gorilla in the market. They have outlasted everyone. I remember for the longest time, people in the 90s, oh, no reason to have Overstreet now. We got Wizard. No reason to have Overstreet now. We've got this. No reason to, nope, Overstreet continues because they've been around the longest. They have the largest group of comic shops. Now, they don't move as fast as eBay, but for your non-Uber hot book, they're really what shops use for your standard average back issue. The covers this time are The Avengers and Death Dealer, which I find pretty weird because the Death Dealer comic's only been around for a little bit, but I guess maybe they didn't want to do a DC cover. And then the big, big book is a much bigger version of it that is spiral bound. And Joe used to have those in the shop. They are great for being a checklist.
Yes.
Which is, I think, what they're made for. They're made for people with poor eyesight, but they also, you know, rather than issues 1 through 25 are worth this much, it's issue 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. So you can check off the ones you have.
Or what I've been meaning to do, because I have a big one lying around here somewhere, check off the books we've talked about. Because, you know, that's the secondary goal of our podcast, is to mention every single comic ever published.
Yep. I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, we'll give it a shot.
But we are almost to episode 600, you know.
I know. Let's see. I'm fast forwarding here. My next one is up on page 352. And I believe I'm in IDW.
Yes, you are.
Yep. Up in the corner there, Star Trek Library Collection Volume 1. This delves into the history of over 400 issues of IDW Star Trek comics. So if you're like me, who I pick and choose, here's your chance to start at the very beginning, and they're going to publish everything, I guess. Let's see, they are starting with the Kelvin timeline and the prequel that led to the 2009 Star Trek movie, Countdown. And I remember reading that because that kind of covered what happened in the Prime universe going into the Kelvin universe and the Mysterious's origins of Nero. And then in Nero, you find out what he did in those cold, dark, lonely years spent as he appeared in the Kelvin universe and waiting for Spock to show up. And Spock Reflections, which is a follow-up to Countdown, discovered what could drive a man to abandon all he knows and go live with the Federation's sworn enemy, his real motivations, and what brought him to this place in his life. I didn't buy all these. Or did I? No, I don't remember. I just remember the Countdown I picked up, which was really good. I picked up Reflections. And if you want to pick up some really cool Star Trek stories, IDW has done a good, well, they did a good job of these because they, in the movies, they didn't really cover much of this. And here's your chance. If you don't have them in your collection, here's your chance to go along with it. And I hope IDW keeps publishing them because I'll pick them up because I don't have any of these. I was a poor collector, Corey.
Well, and you can't buy everything.
What?
I mean, where would you put it?
Oh, I got to take a drink.
I actually want to go back because there's a comic I skipped.
Uh-oh.
On page 292, under Cathead Comics, Dog Boy, Choice Cuts and Happy Endings by Steve Lafler. Dog Boy was a underground slash indie book back in the 80s and 90s. And this is a new comic collection. A 328-page oversized volume collects the best of Lafler's pioneering 1980s underground comic titled Dog Boy, known for its psychedelic twists coupled with lowbrow tropes that border on slapstick. The date is 1982, the early dawn of the alternative comics movement. Steve Lafler, bohemian cartoonist, taps into his unconscious mind to find his inner dog boy. These were very weird. I have not read them since the 80s. I just remember them being very weird and very fun to read because you just never knew what the hell he was going to do on the next page. So it's a really cheap collection, too. 328 pages. I think it's what, only $30? Let me go back and. Of course, now I have to go back and find it again.
Dun, dun, dun. $2.92. Yes,
328 pages for $36.99.
Cool.
Joe?
Page 355 up in the corner under Invader Comics. Animals, number one. A new horror from the twisted mind of writer Keith Foster. A hunter in Olympic National Park dies from what eyewitnesses insist was a long dead elk coming back to life to exact revenge. Next, a bear stalks a camper with human intelligence and determination. Animals are killing people, and it's up to Sheriff Jack Bertrand to figure out why. Only two issues of this one, so I think I'm on board for both of them. Corey?
I think I know why animals are killing humans. We're made of meat.
Tasty. Oh, yeah, we're tasty as hell, Hale.
There's always one book in previews that I'm just geeming over, that I just can't wait to get. A book that I wish I had in my hands the minute I read it, and that one is on page 414. The best of Simon and Kirby's mainline comics. This was their self-published stuff, and Tomorrow's is putting out a hardcover, 256 pages. The four titles, Bullseye, Foxhole, Police Trap, and In Love, look to build off their reputations as hitmakers in the Western war, crime, and romance. But the 1950s backlash against comics killed any chance at success, so Mainline closed its doors after just 2 years. Tomorrow's Publishing is compiling the best of Simon and Kirby's Mainline comics, including all the stories with Simon and Kirby art, as well as key tales with contributions by Mort Meskin and others. The best of Simon and Kirby's Mainline comics presents some of the final and finest work Joe and Jack ever produced. Yeah, and I will talk about this a little later in the show when we get to Freaking and Geeking, but I am really looking forward to this. These are more Kirby comics I've never read because they've never been reprinted. Joe?
I'm on page 358. I saw it. This is from Last Gasp, I believe a current printing of a book I remember reading as a kid.
Yes.
And it's out again. It's actually resolicited from December 22, so I don't know what happened. But it's life in Hiroshima during the war, World War II. It was difficult for a six-year-old, how do you say his name? KG? Let's see, they made their best of it. On the way to school one bright August morning, he was unaware his hometown would soon be turned into a world of horrors. That morning, he watched a single airplane soar through the clear blue sky, carrying with it the most powerful weapon that had ever been created, the atomic bomb codenamed Little Boy. About to fall on the city, changing his life forever. It's a true story. So you get to see what the bombing of Hiroshima and its effects are seen through the eyes of the cartoonist that survived it. I actually used this once in college as part of a term paper, and the teacher, it was basically on the effects of a nuclear attack on Minnesota. And the teacher was like, a professor was like, why don't you just teach the class I was going to do? And I said, if you're serious, he goes, yeah, I'll make it part of your grade. So I used this as part of describing to the class what they may see when they surface from their basements, assuming they made it there after an attack. And it's riveting. I have an original. I just want to point it out because here's your chance to pick it up if you have not been lucky enough. This would be one of those books, if I had a shop, I would buy several of and just keep it on the shelf because it's got a long shelf life. I mean, I was back in college 83 to 87. So that tells you how long this has been in print and how it still resonates today. Corey?
My next book is actually my last comic, and it is in the manga section, page 465. Yashahime, Princess Half Demon, Volume 3. This is a sequel to Inuyasha. I have the first volume is out, second volume's on its way. This is the third volume. It is not by the original series creator, but it does follow the storyline. It's very entertaining. I don't know a lot about manga, but I tend to, if I've read something, I'm going to read more of it. I really like this book. It isn't as sitcom-y as Inuyasha was. It's more serious, but it's just as good, and I recommend it for those of us who don't know a whole lot about the manga world. Joe?
All right. So I will flip through 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I've only got 6 books left. So page 371 under Magnetic, My Friend Toby. Toby's a simple dog living in a seaside country village, indulging in the joys of nature with his freedom-loving artist master. Almost always hungry, nothing matters more to Toby than his master, whom he consoles, exasperates, and sometimes inspires. Toby is happy living in his life of carelessness, yet thoughts and memories start to haunt him, tormenting him with questions. A couple pages of art that I actually thought were cute, so I thought I'd give it a shot. Let's see, page 372, I believe it's Mezcal, written by Kevin Stevens. Annika Darmont's life has sucked since his Indian father struck him with such a weird name before disappearing. When he comes home from his soul-draining job to find his mother dead from an overdose, he decides to abandon the debt she left him and find a new life in Mexico. But trouble soon follows him like a shadow, and he soon finds himself wrapped up in a world of drug smugglers, white supremacists, and federal agents. In the middle of all that, however, one good thing happens. He's introduced to Leela, and when she's kidnapped, rescuing her becomes his single purpose. And they pull a hat trick because they got all three of them. Convoy, another one by Kevin Stevens. Wait a minute, is this all him? Oh, no. My Friend Toby was Gregory Bonucci. So Convoy is, it's 2074. The Earth is an abused ruin. Landscape of desolation, thanks to mankind's inability to live in moderation. Pockets of makeshift civilizations are spread out like islands in a sea of wasted misery, a distance that only the craziest and most desperate madmen dare to traverse. Alex and Fonzie are two such individuals, and they're about to take the contract of their lives, leading to a convoy of misfits and mercenaries on a mission to deliver a cargo of precious medicine across the desolate plains. They'll face lawless hordes, competing agents, and their fleet will winnow before they reach their destinations. But none of those opponents will be prepared for Alex and her wily ways. So Magnetic, you got 3 for 3. These are all graphic novels, I should say. And since I have no omnibuses this month, I got a little extra cash to play with. On page 377, give you 2 seconds to get there. Just a couple books to mention under New England Comic, The Tick, the complete Edlund trade paperbacks. I really cannot express just how freaking funny The Tick was, both in the comic and when it finally became an animated show. He never finished it. It was supposed to go, I guess he stopped on issue 12. It was supposed to go to 13 because it kind of leaves in a cliffhanger. But he was quite frank. You guys, you don't understand how much money I got for making the TV show. It ain't going to happen. So here's your chance. If you've never read this, you really got to check it out. Kitty Corner from Ohio University Press. Comic Shops, the retail mavericks who gave us a new geek culture soft cover. And I mention it because our old buddy, well, they mentioned a lot of luminaries, Steve Geppi, Bud Plant, Chuck Rosansky, but they also interviewed our good friend, Greg Ketter. Matter of fact, rather than buy it here, if you want to just call his shop at Dream Heaven and say, hey, those idiots, Crazy Joe Ryder and Corey Strode said I should buy this from you, he'd probably appreciate the business. Both these are offered again, so it's entirely possible your comic store may have them. So definitely check them out. I'm going to flop to page 410 as I come to the end. Down in the corner, Stranger Comics, Tales of Asunda, number 1. The first kill is always the hardest, especially when you are destined to save the world. Or damn it, a stranger has taught Niobe how to fight, but can she take a life? So I thought I'd try this. It's apparently the first tale in an anthology of the Untamed. And at $3.99, I'll give it a shot. The final one is on page 415. Sickness, number 1. Feeling sick? The man may be following you. 1945, Daniel Buss, an anxious teenager living in small-town America, has been experiencing strange symptoms, mood swings, increased sensitivity, and terrifying hallucinations, threatening to ruin his summer vacation before freshman year. Worse, stalking presence watches. Daniel's every move. 1955, George Brooks, war vet, tireless doctor, nears retirement from the decorated pass. When a local housewife murders her entire family, her son, the sole survivor, put into his care. George grows obsessed with uncovering what could drive this ordinary person to such brutality. Though they live a decade apart, their fates intertwine through a horrifying illness and haunting figure who follows them wherever they go. For $6 through Uncivilized Comics, I'll give it a shot. I could explain me, my ongoing dizziness. It could explain Corey with his anxiety. Corey, the man may be following us.
Well, you're not paranoid if somebody really is after you. Oh. And I really do have somebody after me.
I know we all are. We all want a piece of you. I just want to double check. I do believe that's it. Now it's time to grab that book, flip it over. Because this is for Brian.
Oh, this is the easiest one I've ever had.
Oh, okay. You go ahead. I had a few. It was a couple tough choices there.
A couple of things to point out first. This previews had no t-shirts in it. They did not have a clothing section.
I wonder if they just have given it up.
Also, in the toys, if you notice, they're not grouping them so much by manufacturer anymore, but by characters such as DC Heroes, Demon Slayer, Evangeline, Marvel Heroes, G.I. Joe.
Which, to be fair, when I had my comic shops, that's what I did.
Yeah.
You had everything together in their family. It didn't really matter what it was, be it a, you know, granted, Funko's may be the only one that's kind of a exception to that, but I never had to deal with that because they weren't around when I had my store.
If you go to page 28 in the middle of the Funkos,
woo-hoo!
there are two that I have to buy.
Mm-hmm.
That is the Spider-Gwen for the Across the Spider-Verse. Then the Pocket Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse figure keychains. Got to get the Spider-Gwen. Although I'm very tempted to get the Spot because that was a character that we all thought was completely stupid when created. And then when Mark Waid wrote Daredevil, made the Spot creepy and scary as hell.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur figures.
I know.
And I'm so excited about those. Now, I saw somewhere where there is also a Spider-Girl figure that had a Spider-Girl pop that has the comic background.
Oh, yeah.
Edge of Spider-Verse number 2. I need to find where that is.
Look cool.
Yeah. I thought that would be in previews, but it was not. Joe, what's yours?
Well, on page 31, I'm going to recommend there's a couple of them. The Grim Reaper Homer from Super Sevens Reaction figures. I mean, these are things I think that Brian should just have on his desk, be it at work or home, just to get people to wonder. If you want to buy the Alien President, the Big Eye, Big Eyes are gold, absolute gold. And of course, down beneath in the Godzilla, the whole line is great. But Hydra, the Smog Monster. I mean, you put that, just put that in like a salad in the fridge, and then let people let the fun commence. You know what I'm saying? Very next page, page 32, Brian, get all of them. Dr. Teeth and the Electric Mayhem. I mean, come on. They're sweet. If you didn't buy the $200 set I talked about, the comic or the San Diego Comic-Con exclusive, I got one in the warehouse. Give me a call. I can sell it to you. There are a couple Casey Jones Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle figures to buy. You can choose or buy them both. The first one is on page 39. Which has, a newer Urban Legends one where he's got like the red, white, and blue on his face. And then, of course, if you want the more classic one, way up on page 64, you'll also got a choice to pick up the one where he's wearing more of the hockey mask, the one that we remember from the comic store. If you've got a lot of action figures and you're not quite sure what to do, well, go to page 43. There you got Major League Wrestling Championship Belt Collection. Tell you what, just strap your action figures with a belt. These are for your 1 and 12 scale figures, but heck, they'd look good on any size figures. Even your pop figures there, Corey. And then, of course, I'm always in the mood for a pop figure. And I expect you, Brian, to get all these because I didn't really have a super expensive thing this month that impressed me. But on page 75, the Pop Mr. Simpson Alien Mr. Burns preview exclusive figure. This one's available now, so you could, because it actually came out last year. So give a yell to your comic store. They may have it, or they could probably order it. Matter of fact, that was one thing I noticed as I was going through the previews. A lot of these things are available now. So if you like those Power Ranger figures, like that Ultimate Zord on the same page, just across from them, or you want to go down and get the Poochie figure. Don't know why you would. Although the Homer Simpson with his mouth open is pretty cool. These are all available now. We don't really have a decent comic toy store like the way I had it when I was around, because I'd have had all these in my shop. But you can order them now and you can get them. So when you're going through previews, keep an eye to see what is like new and what is available now. And I don't know. There's a lot of things that are available now. The other thing to notice too is like back on the page 39 where they got the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle arcade Krang extra large figure. A lot of these have been pre-ordered from your shop. So if they're prone to order toys, they may have them coming. Let them know or just order them now because they'll definitely worth a reorder. And that's all, folks.
And here's the ad. Our newest sponsor is NordVPN. Let's be honest, if you're out on the internet, you need a VPN to protect you. There's all sorts of things going on the internet where people can track you. You could accidentally download a keylogger, all sorts of things. NordVPN gives the best security possible. It has a password manager which generates complex passwords, syncs across all your devices, stores your notes and credit card information. It also gives you 10 gigabytes of private cloud storage, secure files that backs up your data automatically. But the main thing it gives you is peace of mind. It gives you peace of mind when you're out on the internet, when you're streaming, when you're playing games, when you're listening to podcasts like this one. It gives you safety anywhere at any time. It protects your online activity. You get full access to all content. And if you use the link go.nordvpn.net/SH3KU, it'll take you to where you can get a great deal for a 1 month plan, a 2 year plan, a 1 year plan. They are our newest sponsor. We're happy to have them. And if you would like to sponsor something here at any of the podcasts on the Solitaire Rose Network, you can. Just email me, solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com. Thanks. And here's my other comic. All my other podcasts. The Solitaire Rose Radio Network is currently on a pause. Basically because COVID-19 has made it so that I have to work a lot of extra hours at both jobs. But you can still go and listen to my other podcasts. Now, you're probably listening to Crazy Comics and Stories, which is the main podcast. But on this same feed, KRAYZCOMIX, is Solitaire Rose Radio, the solo radio podcast that I do. I've done interviews, I've done short stories, I've done all sorts of things, and you can get to it right here on this same feed. I also do a podcast called Novelcast, where I take the novels I've written and turn them into free audiobooks. That's over at novels.solitairerose.com. Dangerous Dan Moore and I, and of course Wolfie B. Bad, give you bad advice over at badadvice.solitairerose.com. You send in your questions, and we give you the aforementioned bad advice. And then myself and Adam Vermillion from For the Love of Comics do the Fantastic Forecast at fantasticforecast.solitairerose.com, where we go through the issues of the Fantastic Four, four issues at a time, to give the plot and commentary on each issue. That's not all. Yes, I'm crazy. I still, over at PWInsiderElite.com, every week on Wednesday, do a recap of the latest episode of AEW Dynamite. I write up what happened, and then myself and Anthony Pyrus will do an audio. Now, you can only listen to the audio if you're a member at PWInsiderElite.com, and if you're a wrestling fan, you should be, where we then break down the episode, talk about what we liked, what we didn't like, give it a grade, and let you know if you should have watched that episode. Those are the other podcasts here at the Solitaire Rose Radio Network. Thanks.
Although I wouldn't surprise if you did a comic. You were close.
It's time for Freaking and Geeking. Joe, what are you freaking on?
Well, I went to the last MCBF Comic-Con. Not officially, because I was sick. You know what I mean? Anyways, I'll talk about the geeking side in a minute, but freaking-wise, I didn't do very well. You know, I brought stuff to sell. I had 8 short boxes. Actually, I brought about 10. I brought quite a few short boxes of stuff. I didn't sell much. And a lot of it's because things that, I don't know if we've ever talked about it on the air, Corey, but, you know, my stock is just not, it's old. I mean, I put a lot of new stuff in there, things I'd never had before. But I think the collecting world is in things that I don't have. They want keys. They want them cheap. People are either buying them for themselves or buying them to flip or buying them to, slab. I had a few people looking at some of the key books that I did have. And, you know, for whatever reason, they put them back, you know, because the way they were looking at them, you know, they're obviously looking for the perfect one. I did talk with Tim at Granite City about CGC, and he said something interesting that I thought was kind of just one of those things to borrow an old Arsenio Hall phrase, things that make you go, Apparently, when you send books into CGC, you can pay an extra $20 to have them pressed, which tends to result in you getting an extra half grade to a grade on your book.
Ooh.
And I thought, what bullshit is that? Oh, yeah, we'll press your books for you. Because there, I mean, that seems to be an ongoing thing. There are actually people, if you're interested, at least if you're in the Twin Cities area, that I could refer you to that press books. But CGC also allows you to do it. Tim, through his, I mean, he's a, you know, Tim from Granite City does a lot of CGCing, and I've got some books I'm going to send in with him. But he said it's always worth the extra $20 just to do it, because he says in his experience, he gets better results. I still call bullshit on that, but, you know, it could be legit. But I'm also like, CGC, like, well, he paid $20. We better give him a better grade. Instead of 5.0, let's give him 5.1. I don't know. Just one of those things that make me go, So, but like I said, I didn't do a lot in sales. I was hoping to do a lot more. That's all I'm going to say about that. Corey, what you freaking on?
Al Jaffe passed away at 102 this week. Most people know Al Jaffe from his enormous time at MAD. He started at MAD in 1955 and was there until he retired 4 years ago. Even when MAD went all reprint, he was still doing a new fold-in every issue. He then retired and has passed on to another artist. I remember when Al turned 100, there was this big campaign to have everybody send him birthday cards, which I did. And he was active up until he passed. I also want to talk about the career most people don't know about, which for most cartoonists would have been a huge career, and we would have remembered him for that. And that is, he started at Timely, which then became Atlas and then became Marvel, in 1942. He worked on a number of humor features, including Inferior Man and the comic that is still in print today, if you go to Marvel Unlimited, Zippy Pig and Silly Seal. He created Zippy Pig and Silly Seal. When he was going around with his portfolio, people would ask him, well, who wrote that gag? Who wrote that? And he had no idea that the people who wrote the gags were not the same people who drew it. He went into the military, worked in the military, and actually did a lot of drawing of blueprints, which is why when you see his stuff in MAD, his inventions and his blueprints and stuff, they look very detailed and very legit, because when he was in the military, he was taught how to do that. And I still remember his inventions in MAD. You would look at them and go, well, that could work. It's silly, but it could work. When he came back, he went back to Timely. He became an editor at Timely and edited their teen humor books, which were all Archie knockoffs, such as Patsy Walker. And he did that for almost 10 years. Stan edited the superhero and adventure and all the other science fiction-y books. Al Faygo edited all the funny animal and kids books. And Al Jaffe edited the teen humor books, which was weird because Stan, most of the writing he did was with the teen humor books. That's where his heart lied. But he had edited the entire line back in the early 40s. So when he came back from the war, they were like, okay, you've still got the superhero and the adventure and the crime and all that. It was when Timely slowed down their publishing. He went for work. He got work with his old friend from high school, Will Elder, working for Harvey Kurtzman. And while he had one article in the second issue of MAD as a magazine, he was one of the guys who left with Harvey Kurtzman to go work for Hugh Hefner on the magazine Trump, which only had two issues. Then they all went to Humbug, which lasted 13 or 14 issues. I've got the collected edition. And then when that folded, he did not go over to Help because the pay on Help was pretty terrible, but the pay at MAD was really good. It was probably the best for a cartoonist other than Playboy. And he was at MAD ever since. He did a number of standalone books, which will never be reprinted because they were copyright, EC Publications, and the creator. So books like the MAD Book of Magic, his, I think, 4 or 5 Snappy Answers to Stupid Questions books, those can't be reprinted because the copyright's held by both. But he lived to be 102. He was active until the end. He was cogent until the end. There are tons and tons and tons and tons of stories out on the internet. I have spent the last few days just reading them. Stuff like when, you know, Joe, I've told you about the MAD trips, right?
Yeah.
Where Gaines would say, all right, pack up. We're going. Where are we going? I can't tell you, but bring your passport. The one time they were in Africa, you know, they had just got off the plane. They were looking for a hotel, and somebody asked, well, why is MAD Magazine in Africa? And Al Jaffe said, because Bill Gaines is so damn cheap, his travel agent thought he was sending us to Aruba. Just... I think that means, well, Al Jaffe was not one of the original EC people, but he was one of the one of the grand old men of MAD. The only EC artist left is Angelo Torres. So kind of freaking about his passing, even though 102 is a hell of a good run. And just go onto Facebook and look up Al Jaffe just to see the stories people have about him, the art that he did. He had such a distinctive style and such a distinctive sense of humor that you could almost just look at something, even if he only wrote it, and go, yeah, that's Al Jaffe. Joe, what are you geeking on?
Well, I did mention that I did do the con, and of course, where'd it go? I was going to say the next one's coming up. SpringCon is back on April 29th, and I'm feeling kind of sick that day. I'm going to be helping Pat again. I don't know if I'm going to bring things, but I will say I brought things for a friend of mine. Her husband passed away, so I've been kind of bringing comics, and those were the comics that sold really, really well. So she came and she was very happy. I basically just kept the sales of hers separate. And when she came, I just handed her a whole wad of cash and said, here you go. And she's like, what's this? Told you we're selling your stuff. I didn't spend a lot of money, mainly because I just wasn't in the mood. But I did pick up some interesting things. And I got them all autographed because, you know, I like signed things. Dave Wheeler. He had Shazam Thundercrack, which apparently had some books that written, drawn, colored by Yerdrew Mikardo. And he explained to me that he had done additional colors in the book, which is why he was selling it. And he didn't do all of it, but I told him, yeah, I just want to read a DC book that doesn't have oodles or Marvel of continuity with it. And this looked cool. He was selling it. And I do like to buy things direct from him. From a dealer, I picked up a couple sign books. Banzai, The Art of Whining in Jinky Karando. It's a sketchbook. And this is one of those sign limited ones. Corey, do you remember Raver that Walter Koenig did?
Yeah.
For Malibu. I have the first issue that he signed. It was like a chrome one that and this was before certificates of authenticity were cool. And I thought, well, that's cool. I don't have his thing. I did pick up one that did have a certificate of authenticity, which basically doesn't mean nothing because you'd have to go back to Malibu and say, hey, this isn't a real Walter Koenig. Well, guess what? They're out of business and good luck finding anybody at Marvel that knows what the F you're talking about, Disney. But I did find one called Danger Girls. The work is dirty, but the pair is up to it. From Anti-Magic, signed by Gregory Lane. And this was apparently a signed limited copy. Tom Nigan was there, and he had his Unbreakable Red Sonja variant. So I picked up one from him and signed it, which was cool. Lest you think my signed comic craziness was just, well, you know damn well I go to eBay and buy it. I got two that I just picked up, a She-Hulk number one signed by Yi Young Lee that came with a COA. And then if you remember Evangeline, Corey, from Maxim Press.
Yes.
If you remember the model that used to pose, Kathy Christian.
And, yes.
I actually have two that are autographed by her. One I actually have on eBay, but I got the swimsuit where she's on it and she's autographed it. And I actually have pictures where I actually met her. She was really, really fun. I think that was probably at one of the Chicago cons. And she was just promoting the book. No idea what she's doing now. I suppose I could Google it if I wanted to. So, you know, yeah, I didn't do good at the con, but it was fun. The one thing I will say, and this is kind of a mini geeking, everybody's getting old. Rumor was sore. I am dizzy. Kelly busted his hand a couple weeks. He had a brace on. There was a couple other guys coming in with canes and walkers. And, everybody that's there are the older dealers. I even talked to Tim at Granite City. I said, hey, do you need help setting up? He goes, no, he still has the guy who's helping him. He just, not feeling under the weather. Not really a lot of young guys there. You know, most of the young guys we know, like I can't remember his name from Rock Hopper Comics. You know, he's the only guy there. He can't break away to go to a show. I told him he should show up or just drop off flyers anyways. But so it was kind of a bittersweet thing, kind of a goodbye. And while there is an MCBA jumping up, it's not the same guys from that were doing the other stuff. Corey, tell the folks what you're geeking on.
Okay, so I talked a little earlier about Jack Kirby and Joe Simon's Mainline Publishing getting a book, and what happened after Mainline Publishing was that they were looking for work all over the place. And one of the places they landed was Harvey Comics. Believe it or not, Harvey, the people who published Richie Rich and Casper the Friendly Ghost, et cetera, et cetera. They had a very long history where they published non-kids books. One of the books was a Black Cat, which in the 40s was a superheroine book, and then it bounced all over the place. It became a Western, it became a romance comic, it became all of these things, but for the last five issues, it was Black Cat Mystic. And the first three issues of Black Cat Mystic were all drawn by Jack Kirby. Then the last two issues were edited by Joe Simon, who used people from the Simon and Kirby studio. So what it seems is that they took the stories that they had left over. So what I hold in my hands, back when I was buying the Guandana Land books rather than getting the lifetime subscription, is the complete Black Cat Mystic with three issues, fully written and drawn by Jack Kirby. And they are very much along the lines of the mystery stuff that came out right after the Comics Code went into effect. These are all code-approved books, so they're not really horror books. They're more twist-ending, ghost story-type things. Matter of fact, there is a continuing character that shows up about two or three times, named, let me get the name here, Mr. Zimmer, the nicest ghost you've ever seen. And he has the Book of Destiny, a strange book which brings the living into close contact with the other world. There are some science fiction stories. There's a monster story. And if I didn't know better, I would think that these were just leftover stories from when mainline comics shut down. Because then you've got stories by, you've got a two-pager by Doug Wildey. That's, wow, I didn't know Doug Wildey was doing stuff like this. But you've got Howard Nonstrand, Pete Morisi, Joe Serta, and other artists who worked at the Simon and Kirby studio, Al Avison. But those three Kirby issues, you could plop those right in to the pre-Hero Marvel, and they would have felt the same, except the scripting was not as bombastic, and they didn't have the giant monsters. So it is Black Cat Mystic. It is Guandana Land Comics 2352. If you are a Kirby fan, this is some rare stuff that I did not even know existed. And I always love when I find new Kirby stuff, especially when I knew nothing about it before I picked it up. Believe it or not, kids, you've listened to us blather on about comic books for 2.5 hours. And as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic that you like the most. Hit my music.